Hi, everyone. I am Tracy Hunter Abramson, and I am here with Sean Ann Bessie, Esther Hatch, and Sarah M. Eden. And today we are going to talk
about You're welcome. Tracy was going to dive right into today's Between the Lines episode topic, and I'm not going to let her, because today is a very monumentous occasion that we are not going to let her ignore. Today marks the anniversary of when Tracy first started publishing. Tracy, how many years has it been?
Okay, I shouldn't admit this because it says I'm older than I admit to, but 20 years.
20 years as a published author, everybody. Congratulations.
Amazing.
Clearly,
not an easy job.
Writing it for. But to 20 years. Tracy was legit not going to mark that on this episode, and we're going to make sure she does. So please leave us comments, social media, and on our YouTube channel congratulating Tracy, because that is a huge accomplishment.
And what I want to know is how many of you listeners have been reading her for 20 years? I would love to see. Pop in if you
let
if
us been, know.
Or how long?
Maybe exactly.
15. That's still pretty darn good.
How and when you discovered the genius that is Tracy Hunter Abramson.
Yeah, well, this, genius is an extension of reality.
And this is when she tells us that the first book came out when she was 12.
Exactly.
Yeah. That was tiny. We're going to pretend that is accurate. I don't feel my age.
It's only as old she as published feel. From the room.
Yeah, well, we're going to say that if we hit 30 years. So
got it. All right. Okay, well, thank you for indulging the interruption. We now return you to your regularly scheduled podcast.
I know, and we're squeezing this in on my book tour for like the book that just came out this week. So.
Yes.
Pretty awesome. Okay, so what we are going to talk about today for real, not just anniversaries, are some of the plot tools that authors use and whether or not we really should use them. So this kind of came up in a couple of different ways. When I was at Thriller Fest in New York last year, one of the reviewers on a panel was adamant that you should never have a prologue. And of course, I had a book that was coming out 2 months later that had a prologue. And she's like, you can just make it chapter one. There's no reason to ever do a prologue. So that's the first question I have for you all is, what do you think? Do you think there are times then when you should use a prologue? And, or do you think it should just be chapter one? What do you think?
I've heard the same argument. I'm sure most of us have. And I guess my personal feeling is that as with most creative endeavors, there isn't a one-size-fits-all rule. I mean, if jumping into the main story without some context wouldn't work, that's what a prologue is for, and it might be the right thing. But in general, it probably shouldn't be too long. Otherwise, it really is another chapter. But I don't know. Depending on who you're talking to, rules are meant to be broken, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I think as writers, we can really get ourselves into trouble when we talk in absolutes. Like, you should never, you can never, or this absolutely should never be done. Because chances are that's not true. Mm-hmm. If we can, like Sean was saying, understand kind of what they're used for, what the rules are around using them, then you understand them. You need to understand the concept as opposed to the hard and fast rule, because there are so few absolutes in writing.
Yeah, I agree. Like, whenever somebody says like you should never, I actually really do listen though, because I think often there are really strong reasons for them to make that statement. I don't think you should make statements like that, but I guess I'm grateful for the few people I know who do for that reason, because I do think I've learned a lot when I've heard a statement like that and been like, well, wait, why? You know? So with prologues, and this might not be the funnest thing to say to Tracy, who has a book coming out with one, but the reason why I usually don't do prologues anymore is I was on like a reading page of some sort, and somebody had asked this question, and it wasn't authors, it was readers. And I think they'd asked, do you read prologues, which was, I thought was just a ridiculous question. I'd never heard someone ask that. I'm like, what do you mean? Do you read a prologue? And I was shocked to see the percentage of people that just said they skip them. So for me personally, if I feel like a book needs a prologue, I usually just call it chapter one. I might, it's like totally a prologue, but I might not call it that because I know there's people out there who just will skip it, which I'm not sure. Like, it really did baffle my mind because I'm like, I'm sure they realized they needed it, you know, like as an author. I was very offended. But after that, I'm like, okay, that makes sense to me. I mean, there's lots of other reasons people might say not to do it. But to me, that was the number one where I was like, oh, well, if somebody's going to skip it because I title it a prologue, I might just not do that.
Okay, so now I have to want listeners and viewers to pop in the comments. Do you skip prologues? Because I kind of wonder like how many people really do that. And I've heard that as well, that some people are like, oh, I always just skip it. The one thing I have found with my prologues is it's almost always one of two scenarios. One is there's a huge time skip. And so it's really backstory. And if somebody starts from chapter one, they're missing some of the content in the backstory, but they could go forward and it's the story still can complete without it. And the other one is, this is my suspense author thing coming out, is if there's a point of view and it's somebody who's going to die.
Spoiler.
No, it's not always the case, but it's like, if there's somebody who's like, you're only going to see them once.
Yeah.
They have something critical to, I have to write one that they don't.
That actually, but it's, see, but this is making like so much sense to me. Yeah.
But the thing is, again, in chapter one, that person who either died or is no longer going to be part of the story, something that happened to them is now critical. That's going to unfold in the story anyway. So for me, I think if you do a prologue, it has to be able, if somebody skips it, the story still has to make sense. So that's kind of been my rule of thumb, because I for some of those, I just have a hard time making it. And I do always ask my editor, I'm like, could I make this chapter one? And no, every time.
Especially if it's a character that this is the only time they're getting a point of view, right, that I've never thought to do something like that. So I'm like, oh, that actually does make sense.
Esther must
be weird as a chapter one.
Esther doesn't kill people in her books. Off
characters. I don't kill people very often. Put that on.
And there's the quote of the episode.
No, I'm not like Tracy. I don't kill people very
often. My daughter is still trying to read through all my books and do a body count of how many people I've killed. And I don't want to know the answer to this quest she is on. So back to the topics of the day. So what about epilogues? I don't often hear people complain about that because I kind of feel like if somebody wants to know what happens afterwards, they're going to keep going. It's not, the skip part is not the same as a prologue. But what do you think? Do you think epilogues are good, or do you think, again, would it be better just tack on another chapter?
Okay, so here's an interesting thing. I very seldom read epilogues. Right, the shock on everyone. To me, I've always kind of viewed prologues and epilogues as like bonus content. Like if you want a little extra insight before you start the book, there's a prologue. If at the end of the book you want a little more of what comes after the story has concluded itself, then you read on in the epilogue. I tend to, when I finish that last chapter, if I'm in a place where I am super satisfied with where the story landed, I'm at a place where I feel like, yes, the arcs completed their course, the characters reached their resolution and I'm happy with where things are, I tend to stop there. Not because I'm anti-epilogue, but because I don't feel like I need the bonus. Sometimes I'll come back later and read it because I'm just kind of intrigued. But for me, I don't know. I think because I feel like bonus, I tend to not read them. But it doesn't mean I never do. And it doesn't mean I don't think they have a place or that they aren't useful. A lot of times when I do like a new edition of a book, like when we put out my boxed sets of some of my series, we went and added bonus content to those books. And I added epilogues or I added bonus because to me, that's how it works in my brain. So I think it's kind of similar to what Tracy was saying. If you kind of know what the epilogue can accomplish, and you can use it to accomplish that well in your book, absolutely. include it. But I love the idea of making sure, if you're going to label it epilogue and prologue, that the story also works without it, because there are some weird readers who will skip one or the other. But it also helps you make sure you aren't actually writing a chapter one or a final chapter and just labeling it that way. You literally are adding in additional insights for readers.
I love that.
Yeah. That's this is so fun for me to hear. Like, I did not know you didn't read epilogues, Sarah. It is shocking.
Very seldom also, do, especially on the first read. I'll sometimes come back. Yeah. But on that first read, I tend to stop. Yeah.
The weird thing is, like, I'm not offended. Like, I am actually offended about people not reading prologues, because to me, I've always seen them as important. Like something's going to come from that that you're going to not know. So it's interesting hearing like Tracy saying like, oh, I understand that people sometimes don't. So I have to make sure the story works without it. But that's how I've always felt about epilogues. So it doesn't offend me if people don't want, because I've always seen it as like bonus content a little bit. Yeah. And I've never heard anyone complain about a book having an epilogue. I've only ever heard people either. Complain about them not having epilogues. So I almost always include an epilogue. I kind of like writing them. It's always kind of my last thing I write. Sometimes I've had the book turned into the publisher and like it's maybe a surprise for them that when I turn it in the final time, now it has an epilogue.
Here's which extra.
Is maybe not fair, but I actually like giving myself that space after the book is done for a while and thinking and being like, what would I want to see? Like, what future event would just be so fun to see these couples do? So the only times usually I don't have an epilogue now is maybe in a novella situation where the word count is such an issue. So sometimes those words will need to be put in the story, the meat of the story, and I can't like use them on expendable things. So.
Yeah, that's great. I agree with Esther. I feel like a lot of readers really enjoy having an epilogue. I've heard of people wanting an epilogue, and I've tried to figure out why that is. And I think that a lot of times it's because at that point in the book, the reader is so invested in the lives of the hero and heroine. They really want to know that X number of weeks, months, or years later, they're in a good place, that what they were working for throughout the whole book has been realized. And so I think, especially if a significant amount of time has passed, an epilogue is kind of, well, like you said, a fun bonus. It's like you're just reassuring the readers that, yes, it worked out.
Right.
So
I love that. You are muted.
Just saw that. I'm trying to make sure my cough doesn't bother everybody. So we also had a listener recently ask about whether or not it's a good idea to use flashbacks, because this person was using flashbacks in their book. How do you all handle the introduction of that critical backstory in your books? Like things that some people might consider doing flashbacks for, do you ever do those, or do you have other tools that you prefer to use?
I've actually never used flashbacks, so I don't feel like I'm very qualified to answer this one. I have used letters from the past where people read the letter and that gives you the information of what happened in a previous generation or to that person earlier. I have one book that is coming out this year that I needed to give enough information from the past that I actually ended up having it be the first section of the book rather than a flashback. And then there's a big jump in time to the second part. So I really think it depends on how much information you're trying to share as to whether or not you can do it in a flashback. I don't think a flashback should be a huge chunk of material.
Yeah, that's interesting hearing you say, because so my very first book, I learned a lot. I learned a lot because that's your first book. And it had two flashbacks, I think, or maybe just one. I'm not sure. But my editor told me to take it out. She was just like, you don't need this. Just weave this into the story. Well, I disagreed with her, but I also knew I was a new author and was like, there's a reason why she said that. And it was kind of long, like Sean said, like keeping them short, I think is really important. And so instead of listening to her and just taking it out, I spent the next, I don't know, week or so researching flashbacks, how people have done it, reading examples of good ones, and was able to do a flashback. I don't want to say right, because it's not like you can do them wrong exactly, but better. And so I learned a few things about writing flashbacks. One is to keep them short and to make them feel like a memory, like a flash, like something jogs the memory, something brings you back. So, you know, so it's not like, I think I had written it almost like an, and we are now interrupting you to bring you a snippet of their history. And then, you know, like, I think I titled it 3 years earlier, but it was the middle of the chapter. You know, it wasn't like a new chapter. So it was just, it was awkward and clunky the way I had originally done it. And I found some really good examples. I think the favorite one that I had to use was in The Hunger Games. They talk about PETA being the boy with the bread. And you get this flashback of him giving Katniss the bread. And so I looked and I used that actually quite a bit as like my example for how to craft it. And what I essentially ended up doing was cutting it much shorter, having it like having the descriptions feel different too, because these people aren't living in that moment anymore. It's a memory. It's like, how did that make her feel at the time? Not how does it make me feel now? So it was really fun to do. And I do think the book still needed that because it was like the one good like experience these two characters had together in the first three quarters of the book. And I didn't want to take it out. So, but I don't think I've ever written one again. Like, so I feel like I did take my editor's advice to take out flashbacks in general, but I still did that one.
I think that's really, really excellent advice, though. Like, if we take the time as writers to figure out what makes any of these tools, be it an epilogue, a prologue, a flashback, like so many things that can go wrong in so many ways, if we take the time to figure out what makes them work, what circumstances make it the right choice, like what they can accomplish that you can't accomplish with other techniques, then we're far more likely to know when it makes sense to use them. We're far more likely to know how to approach them so that when we use them, they aren't clunky or awkward or actually doing more harm to the flow of our story than the benefit we're getting from them. Like Esther, I only have one book that has flashbacks in it, and I debated for a really long time whether or not to use them. But in the end, it 100% made sense for that character to be experiencing these moments from his past in that format. It didn't make sense for him to be recounting it. We literally needed to step back with him into the actual moment. They were very brief. They accomplished exactly what they needed to. We pulled back out in books since then when I've thought about using flashbacks because we had some very strong memories that needed to be part of these characters' growth. It didn't make sense to do them that way, because I'd taken time to step back and really look into what makes them work, why they're useful, when they make sense over other things. So like with the other tools and approaches we've talked about, it's really a matter of understanding what makes them work, what makes them not work. And once you understand the difference, you'll have a much better grasp on when to include them in your own writing, because they can be fantastic tools when you know the reasons for them. I think that's a crucial approach to almost every aspect of writing.
No, that's great advice. So, and one thing I think we've all discovered is that for every rule that somebody puts out there, there's going to be some best-selling author who's breaking it. Like, it's just always the case. So how do we know as authors, you know, when we're crafting those stories, when is it okay to go against the norm or ignore the rule that maybe is a fad and is going to shift again? But, you know, like, and same thing with editors, like when do we stand up and say, you know what, I know you're telling me this, but this is why I need to keep it this way. So how do we get that advice?
So I think it always comes down to why that rule exists. Why does somebody feel like this is a rule? Because I don't think there are absolute rules, right? So I think the number one thing is you have to know what kind of rules are out there. You have to have spent enough time in this community to be aware, and you're not going to be right away. Like, you learn as you go. So I'm sure all of us have broken some of these rules, and not because we studied them out and decided to, but because we didn't realize it was a thing. So I feel like the people who do it and do it well, they actually are kind of masters at knowing why you would never do this. And then they're able to twist that or just perform it in a way that it's like, most of these things come about because they're overused, right? Like, I feel like a lot of these rules, like flashbacks might've gotten overused, or starting your story looking in a mirror is overused. Never start, do that way. So I feel like, but they were used at first for a reason. So if you can kind of know, and obviously the looking in the mirror thing, it was used to describe the character usually. So that's a tricky one. I would still be like, oh yeah, I know that's why they did it. So I'm going to do it so I can do that. No, that, you know, that's exactly why you shouldn't do it necessarily. But if you can twist it on its head, and maybe the mirror, the person in the mirror, like raises its eyebrow when you didn't, then suddenly it's interesting. I think there's, yeah. So to me, I think the main thing is like, only break rules you understand really, really well, and do it in a creative, fun way.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Absolutely. Some at the time, gut-wrenching advice I got as an author that actually has served me really well. It was a project that never has actually been published. I don't know if I would ever go back to it, but I was trying something really kind of different and unique. And I had sent it past a beta reader that I very much trusted, understands this industry, understands writing. I mean, just really, really solid. And just said, you know, I'm trying something. What do you think? And they read it and said, well, this thing is so different. You really can't get away with it. It's not going to get published. It's not going to get picked up. And I said, well, but this author has been doing something so similar. And it's this very well-known author. And the response was, yeah, but you're not them. And I had a moment where I was like, ooh. And we kept talking, and I figured out what they were saying wasn't, you aren't as good as them. Even though that was true and still is, authors who are very well established can get away with bending and breaking rules in the way newer or less, I want to say popular, famous, I don't know, less accepted.
Established.
Established. There you go. Yeah. Authors can, because if you're going to break a rule, especially a rule, I got to put that in air quotes. We've been talking about how rules are really just understanding how something works. They're going to break it, especially break it in big ways. You have to have enough trust from both your publisher and from your readers for them to be willing to make that leap with you, because the chances of it going wrong are so huge that you often never get past that hurdle. So I tell myself that a lot. Not that it means don't ever try something new or don't ever try to bend things, but outside of the creative aspect of it, there's that consideration. Is, can I pull this off so well that I will be immediately trusted and people will come with me? Or do I have enough clout that I can try this? So that's less of a fun, creative approach, but they are things to keep in mind. Is this super cliche and I have to have enough trust to try it anyway? Or is it super strange? So yeah, it's something to bear in mind. That advice was a little rough, and I still think of it sometimes, but you may see huge best-selling authors violating the quote unquote rules, but you have to remember the added extras they have that help them get away with it.
I think that's really good advice, Sarah. And another thing that you said that I'd just like to follow up on is when you first wrote this book, you gave it to someone you trusted, somebody who knew how the industry works. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we have people as writers in our lives that fall under that category, whether it's a really well-respected beta reader, whether it's your editor, whether it's somebody in the publishing industry and, you know, who sees the big picture, to brainstorm with them, to share your idea with them and get their honest feedback, I feel like as long as you're talking with someone who's open-minded enough to say, wow, this actually might have merit, or I think you might want to stick to the way you've done it before. And to be able to take that honest feedback and know that it's coming from a good place. It's not just, you know, a random person giving you an opinion. This is somebody who really knows the craft. Mm-hmm. I think that we just all need to be humble enough to realize that there are people out there who may understand things better than we do, may see things more clearly because they're not so invested in the project.
Right.
And that, I think that's helpful.
And that's such a good point that when we're working on our own projects, we know what happens. We know why we did what we did. And so, you know, we really do need, whether it's a critique group or a beta reader or an editor, somebody to look at our work and just basically help us be where we want to be, because they want us to be better as well. So, but thank you all. Thank you for all your great advice today, ladies. And thank you, listeners, for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe and hit that like button. And if you have topics you would like for us to discuss, writing or otherwise, please drop those in the comments as well. We would love to hear them, hear your ideas. And we look forward to joining you with us on the next episode of Between the Lines.